Welcome to the latest episode of Across the Bifrost. First, I want to thank every one of you for listening. We really, really appreciate it. It's the end of the year, and we want to wish you all a happy new year. We hope that 2020 wasn't all bad for you. We hope that 2021 brings you good things. It's incredible. While this is labeled as episode 57, we've actually had over 60 episodes this year. Well, since we've come out. We just want to thank each and every one of you for listening. We really appreciate it. Pat and I didn't miss a week this year, which is something I'm very proud of. So we hope you enjoy this episode. It's a little bit shorter, but it's got a lot of good value in it. Pat and I have played a lot of Defenders, and this is our Defender affiliation review.
Somewhere across the Bifrost, way up high, there's a pod.
Welcome back to the latest episode of Across the Bifrost. Today, we'll be taking a look at the Defenders affiliation review. It's a pretty popular affiliation right now. They haven't been out for that long, and they just got one. Yeah, they did. They just got a brand new character. But before we dive into that, we have my co-host Pat Dunford joining us from across the pond. Pat, how you holding up?
I'm holding up real good, thank you, TT. Defenders is one of my favorite affiliations. Doctor Strange is one of my favorite characters, both in the comics, in the movies, and on the tabletop. So I'm really excited to talk about this affiliation with you.
We do want to wish everyone a happy new year. I know 2020 was very trying for so many of us. Hopefully 2021 is a little bit better. We kind of just want to dive right into things. This is a big review we're doing. So Pat, how do we review an affiliation for those of us who haven't listened to one of these before?
Yeah, so we look at four things that together create the affiliation. The first is we look at the leader of the affiliation. So this is the sum of the character themselves. That's because you're always going to be playing a leader with your affiliation. They're always going to be on the table. So it's very important to know what they can do and how good they are. Their powers inform a lot of how the affiliation plays on the table, just because of their presence. After that, the second thing is the leadership that they bring, the effect that gives some sort of advantage to every single person on your team. This is a core part of the affiliation, very, very important indeed. And then thirdly, we look at the affiliated characters. Which characters are you going to be routinely taking in your rosters and in your squads on the table? What are their pros and cons, and how do they contribute towards the affiliation's game plan? And then last, but by no means least, we've got the team tactics cards. Which tactics cards are unique to the affiliation? What do they do? And are they any good? So those are the four things. Usually we start off with the leader of the affiliation. And in the case of the Defenders, that is the mighty Doctor Strange. So TT, what do you think of Doctor Strange?
I think he's phenomenal. A lot of different flexibility. I love his builder with the push on it. He has a very real affiliation, which we'll kind of get into later, but it helps him a lot. He basically has an energy attack and a mystic attack, but his affiliation makes it so he can kind of have whatever. And the mystic binding is a phenomenal attack, right? If we ignore, oh, that's not its name. What is it? Crimson Bands of Sidorak? Is that right? I don't have his card.
Yes. I think Mystic Binding is the wild effect that it grants.
Yeah, and I think...
If you get the Yahtzee.
Yeah, and if you get the Yahtzee, giving them an activated token, really powerful. But even just handing out a stagger is incredibly powerful. We talked about it in one of our previous After the Credit scenes. It's a great way to counter some of these really powerful focal point characters, which Doctor Strange kind of is. But putting a stagger token on Magneto or an activated token on She-Hulk when she comes out is incredibly powerful. I really like Doctor Strange. He also just has a lot of flexibility in how he wants to spend his power, right? He spends power phenomenally, either in helping his teammates, healing his teammates, or his own personal impact on the battlefield.
Yeah, he's a really cool piece. He's really flexible. He's got enough resilience that he's hard to deal with. He's got enough speed that he can go to a lot of different places on the table, especially when coupled with his range, right? That medium base plus flight plus medium move with range 4 attack is a long way. And then his attacks exert a lot of control. I love him as a control piece. I like that he also protects himself and the models around him. He's just super cool. He's one of my favorite characters to play full stop. He's one of those characters that I would be happy to take in almost any affiliation. So it definitely doesn't feel like a handicap for Defenders to always be using him.
Yeah, I definitely think that he's... You never feel bad about taking Doctor Strange. What I will say is sometimes I don't love taking the Soul Gem, but it's how you get the early portal, And it's often kind of something I'm willing to do there, right?
Yeah, so he's Doctor Strange has access to two gems. And of the two, the Soul Gem is definitely the more popular just because it's cheaper, right? Time Gem costs two. And I can't say that the Time Gem is one that I've experimented with much. I do find that the extra attack for him is really nice. And I have used it with some success, but I think seven cost is a bit much to ask. But at six threat with the Soul Gem, Doctor Strange, in my opinion, gets worse point for point. But the ability to turn on Pentagrams of Feralla on turn one, as you said, is incredibly powerful. And it basically feels like a one threat cost that you're paying to play that card.
Yeah, it's an incredibly powerful card, right? And like I said, as much as I don't like putting the gem on him, it is if you want to have the early portal play, it's the only way to do it. And honestly, most of the time, it's worth it.
Agreed. I think I wouldn't blame you if you don't like portals or if you just don't not interested in the turn one nonsense. I would not blame you for not taking the gem. But I think, especially in a dedicated roster where you're only playing defenders, it's sensible to have the plan to at least have the option to take the gem and that card to keep your opponent on their toes and to give you a lot of options in different crises.
I think that's very fair. And we've covered Doctor Strange kind of in depth in his own episode. Is there anything else we need to talk about with him?
No, I just give him a big tick. He's a great character, one of the best in the game, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I think you've mentioned this before, Pat, but just to reiterate it, he's so flexible. He can play the game in so many different ways. He's really malleable there. So Doctor Strange is great.
He is great. Now, the second thing we look at is the leadership. What do you think of Doctor Strange's leadership?
I like it. It helps you smooth out dice spikes. It helps you fish for some optimized attack lines. It does cost a little bit of power, but I generally speaking, I like the affiliation. You?
Yeah, I think it's kind of a middle-of-the-road leadership. It's really useful, but it costs power, and that does limit, obviously, how you can use it, and it limits which characters are most effective in the affiliation, because ideally you want characters who have the power to spend to be able to use this once a turn when they're attacking. I like that it helps offensively in that it lets you do more damage by matching your attack type to your target character's lower defense, but it also then helps inhibit the characters you attack. So it's not a pure offensive leadership by any means, because once someone is hexed, sure, you can kill them more easily, but also you can ignore them if you need to. And I like how that plays with the different control elements in the defenders. And I feel like the flexibility of the leadership plus the flexibility of Strange together help define the defenders as being a very flexible affiliation, where like it's very common for a play with Doctor Strange to push a character away, do a little bit of damage and hex them and keep them at bay, right? But similarly, you can also pull them towards you and hex them and then try and kill them. And you just have a lot of inherent flexibility with the package that he and his leadership bring.
Yeah, definitely true there. So next up, we have kind of a lot of more expensive characters is what I'll say. Let's start here. Let's start with the more expensive characters. So we have three fours coming in, and let's start with Peter Parker.
Yeah, so Peter Parker is a perfectly fine character, right? We've talked about him fairly recently in our Web Warriors review. He is a character that some people hate. But people, I think, in general, are starting to realize his flexibility is good. In Defenders, he helps emphasize the control aspect of the team, right? Doctor Strange has great control. Spider-Man has great control. And he is a really, really good choice if you want to play a team that is more focused on control. He can be a really good choice for your four slot.
I think it gets interesting. My biggest negative on him is he's just competing with some really competitive four slots to his left and his right. And I don't think there's anything else we need to say about Spider-Man, but I do think that Daredevil is a really interesting include.
Yeah, so Daredevil is as fast as Spider-Man, right? And is approximately as resilient, maybe a bit more on average. And he's doing a bit more damage. And the thing that he's bringing to the table in particular is a really strong area of effect attack, which is really good in combination with Doctor Strange's leadership.
Yeah, so for those of you who don't remember, this will affect everyone under a beam or all the attacks Daredevil makes with the way that the Defender's leadership is worded. Daredevil is that piece where I've continued to be impressed with him on the table the more I play him. So I like Daredevil. I think it's definitely a powerful combination, and it definitely makes it just a little bit tighter at the four threat, which means, for me, Peter Parker hasn't been making any rosters lately.
Yeah, I know some people really enjoy Peter Parker in Defenders, and I can see why. I think he's a fine choice, but you're right. The competition is tough. And the third character that he's competing with in the four slot is Wolverine, who, for my money, is one of the very best four threat characters in the game.
Yeah, just another interesting dynamic, and really lets Defenders brawl a little bit more, right? He's broccoli, not a potato. Wolverine combined with Valkyrie, who we'll cover later on, just makes for some really early aggressive plays. And man, Wolverine loves going through a portal. You can send Wolverine through a portal with no matter the cost, and it's a really nasty first turn adamantium slash and a berserker barrage.
Yeah, it's really powerful. Defenders don't have a lot of affiliated cards, so it's easy enough to fit no matter the cost in, and you might even be able to get something like exceptional healing on top. I think the opening plays he has with portals, plus the access to those cards, cements him as being the premier four-drop choice in Defenders, but that's not to say that the others don't have value. And if you're playing a single affiliation roster, there's no reason not to take multiple choices. In a lot of ways, you've got this spectrum, right, where Spider-Man is your control piece, who's very fast. Wolverine is your brawler, and Daredevil is in the middle. He does a bit of both. So you can decide which option you'd rather have and how you want your roster to lean.
Yeah, I really like him there. So now we actually get to some more expensive characters, right? We have Ghost Rider coming in at five. He's an interesting character who I've almost never seen on the table anymore.
Yeah, he's really cool. He has a lot of really unique abilities and two unique tactics cards. I think the reason you don't see him very much is just looking at his base stats in a vacuum. He is not very resilient for his cost, so he can die pretty easily. His attacks, although powerful, are quite unreliable. He doesn't have a lot of dice manipulation. And so he's a character that can have really great games, but also, in my experience, can have some pretty disappointing ones.
Yeah, I think it's also worth pointing out that a five-threat character combined with a five-leader just makes for some awkward list building, especially when we talk about it. For so many of us, Strange is often a six-threat leader, so it just makes that kind of slot a little bit more contentious, and we're losing a roster slot for a gem as it is, so... I think he's a fine addition if you enjoy playing Ghost Rider. Ghost Rider brings some interesting tactics card choices. We talked about Defenders not having a lot of them. So he can kind of do what Wolverine does by adding some decent value tactics to your selection if you feel like you're really hurting there.
Yeah. To build on your point about it's awkward to play him as Strange, one of the things that makes it especially awkward is the nature of the two characters, where in a lot of crises, if you've got two expensive characters, you can't afford to have them in the same place at the table, right? You just need to have them exerting their influence on different parts of the table so that you can get ahead on the victory points. But both characters have mechanics where they want to be near their friends, right? Ghost Rider wants you to be attacking people that aren't him. Doctor Strange wants to be protecting people that are near him. And so you get this slightly difficult tension where you've got these two expensive characters that necessarily need to be apart, but actually both want to be together. I think Ghost Rider is better in crises that let you do that, right? He's better on things like Gamma Wave and Demons Downtown, where he and Strange can play together and benefit from each other.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I can get behind that.
Yeah. And then we have another character who's even more expensive than the four we already talked about, and that is Hulk. Classic Hulk, previously Avengers fame, is also available as a defender. And I think a lot of people prefer him in Defenders than in his original affiliation. What do you think?
I think that's fine. If you want to play Hulk, I think this is a great place to play him. For me, he's too expensive, too clunky. I don't enjoy it.
Yeah, I can see that. I think he is good in this affiliation. He reliably has the power to use the leadership because he generates three a turn. And he benefits a lot from the support of Doctor Strange, keeping him alive. If he can create a situation where he's holding multiple extracts and he's supported by Doctor Strange. That's a real problem. And pentagrams can let you do that, right? You can create plans where you send Hulk through pentagrams and grab multiple cubes or whatever it may be. And those plays are pretty strong. So I think he has a place in the roster, which is great. I think he's by no means an auto-include, but he is a perfectly respectable option in Defenders, in my opinion.
Yeah, so I think we agree that Hulk's best card is Gamma Launch, and Gamma Launch with portals is a little... we're spending a lot for early turn movement that I don't think we need both of them, is I guess what I'll say. I do like definitely sending him through the portal, right? He has... It's important to remember, Hulk doesn't have any way to gain power other than getting attacked in the three he generates a turn. So you can stick him through the portal and do his fantastic throw, right? He's one of the best... I think he is the best throw in the game. We can mince words on that later. But you can't Gamma Leap if he's making the attack change, which is kind of a big thing for me. And while it's great to change a Hulk Smash or his strike to another type, right? But his basic beam costs 3, and that's all he generates. So for me, he doesn't have... Hulk has a bunch of great ways to spend power, but Hulk's power generation for me has always been a little bit lacking.
Yeah, that's fair. Like I said, I think the main reason you take Hulk is if you have a very specific plan of how you're going to use him to interact with the crises through the portals. I don't think you take him as an all-rounder choice. And in fact, you've got so many good expensive characters that are better all-rounders, like the ones we talked about already.
Yeah, and like Pat said, if you are going to use Hulk, you really need to incentivize your opponent to attack him. Getting a bunch of value crisis pieces on him is super important.
Yeah, very big deal. So that's the expensive characters. One of the things that defines the Defenders is they've got an expensive leader and they've got a lot of expensive characters. They only got a few cheap choices, and that those choices are really important because you're going to need them to make your affiliations work, and they're going to see the table a lot because Strange is so expensive.
Luckily, though, their cheap characters are incredible. I think everyone would, well, mostly incredible. Valkyrie, kind of leading the pack coming into a 3-threat. I mean, what else can we say about her? She's just a fantastic piece, right? Move, throw. Her ability to dump power out through charge, Dragon Fang, Warrior of Legend is phenomenal. She's just a really, really solid 3-threat. And one of the important things to note is she's one of the base defenders who can go through the portal and still interact with things innately, her and Hulk being the two big obvious ones.
Yeah, so that's really good. I love Valkyrie. I would always start my rosters with her and Doctor Strange because she's cheap and because she's powerful and because she's flexible. Her flexibility in that she can have a blender mode, right, where she charges in and does lots of attacks and turns all her power into damage through Dragon Fang and Warrior of Legend and throws is really strong. But she also has a good control mode where she just double moves and throws someone off an objective. The fact that she's that flexible is one of the reasons why Defenders is so flexible, right? We talked about the leadership is flexible, Strange is flexible. Well, they've got this other affiliated character who you can always take because she's cheap, who's also really flexible. And that's just a very, very good package.
Yeah, I don't think anyone has anything bad to say about Valkyrie. Hawkeye is your other 3-threat character, and he's... I like Hawkeye a lot in Defenders. We talked about it in previous episodes. I think he synergizes with their leadership really, really well.
Really well. I think Hawkeye is quite a divisive character. Some people love him, some people hate him. I think both of us like him a lot. I just, like you said, he's just so good with the leadership. He's really good at generating power, so he can already choose between physical and energy, but having the option to throw in a mystic as well is great. And I love that his plan in Defenders is to just layer on different conditions, right? He has this plan to shoot you twice, apply Hex, and hopefully a bunch of other conditions as well with his arrows, and like cripple characters. And then if he gets lucky with his dice rolls, he just switches from debilitating them to murdering them.
Yeah, he's an incredibly strong character. I love the layering of effects. Maybe some people don't like Depending on the Wild for the full quiver trigger, but if you can get Shock and Hex on like an offensive beater character, that really helps slow them down, right? You have some control elements with slow and poison, right? If you want to slow and poison the target before Valkyrie throws them off a point, that's obviously incredibly frustrating. So I like Hawkeye a lot. I understand some people don't, but I think he's a phenomenal piece.
I agree. I think he works incredibly well in concert with Doctor Strange, where Doctor Strange can help people stay at arm's length and can keep Hawkeye going where he's otherwise a little bit fragile.
And correct me if I'm wrong, Pat, but I believe you can use Mystic Empowerment on Hawkeye's Quick Draw, right? So the out-of-activation turns you can get can still theoretically hex people?
Yeah, which is great, because there's nothing worse than before you make your attack roll, you take damage, and you are shocked and hexed, and then that attack starts to look real bad.
Yeah, so both of us like Hawkeye. I think he's a good... I just think he's valuable to have in there for that lower affiliation combination, right? Well, you know, we can go Hawkeye, Valkyrie, and Strange No Gem to get an 11 threat core, and I think that's really valuable. Yep.
Yeah, it's a really powerful, flexible core. Those three together are good in pretty much every situation. So, last, and in many ways least, we've got the lowest threat character on the team, the Mighty Wong. This is a character that generated a lot of excitement when he was first released because he's so unique as a dedicated support character in the two threat slot. How do you think he fits into Defenders, TT?
I don't think he fits very well. He's cheap, which is great. I mean, I guess you have some synergy. I don't remember the name of his ability, Vishanti something, right? But he can heal. Doctor Strange can heal. It's an interesting combination. I just haven't loved Wong on the table in execution. You really need a plan for how you're going to use him. And for me, where he's going to stand is often where I have Hawkeye, and I normally would rather have Hawkeye for the additional points.
Yeah, I agree with you, and I think our love of Hawkeye is partly why we don't enjoy Wong so much in Defenders. I think we're not necessarily right on that. I know a lot of people get good use out of Wong in Defenders, but for me, he's not flexible enough, which is what I want for my Defenders. And he's a little bit redundant because I'm already taking Strange, who can heal, and who is not as efficient in dealing damage for his threat. I don't want another character that does more of that necessarily.
Yeah, and he's not far down the list of characters I'd take. For me, the biggest thing is, like, if I had that roster slot that the Soul Gem occupied, I think I would consider dropping Wong in there. The other negative for Wong, let's focus on the positive first. Removing the special condition is the main reason I would want to take Wong. I think that's incredibly powerful. The negative form is, like, there's some really great twos out there. Okoye is a pretty flexible two defensive, and her offensive output's pretty good. Her spear thrust is already nuts when you factor in the Defender's leadership. That's really good. I guess we'll talk about this in the ACS. I think Toad is also obviously very compelling there as well.
Yeah, I really like Toad in pretty much every team, as well as Okoye. I think one other thing to note with Wong, one of the reasons why he doesn't work very well in Defenders, apart from the fact that he overlaps a lot with Strange, is the fact that he doesn't really make any use of the leadership. And a lot of the other twos make really great use of the leadership. I think he's an okay choice, but I would not fault you for skipping him. I think the main reason he's included in a lot of Defenders rosters is just to have an affiliated two threat for roster building. And with so many expensive characters, that can make your life easier.
Yeah, so that covers all the characters. It's quite the collection. I think it's actually a really powerful collection of characters. How many? We have three Strange. It's 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 characters. Yeah, it's a good variety they have. I think they have a really powerful collection of affiliated heroes.
Yeah, and we know from their affiliation list that more are coming at some point as well. One of the things we said already is Defenders are really flexible. They're massive selection of characters really contributes to that, right? They've got a very diverse team. It's not very focused in what it can do, but it can do a bit of everything, and that's really cool.
All right, so next up, I think we have their tactics cards, Pat. Where do you think we should start there?
So they've only got one affiliated tactics card, so let's start with that. And it is Pentagrams of Ferala, a card we've already talked about several times in this episode because it's really great.
Yeah, being able to drop that portal is insanely powerful. If you haven't, if you don't know what the card does, you can check it out on mcpdb.acrossthebifrost.com. Basically, it just gives you a portal for one power. You can move up to a 5 with these set wormhole outputs. It lets you do some really early pressure onto the map. It's an incredibly powerful card. It does require you to take the Soul Gem in order to get it off on round 1. But like we said, it's often worth it. It's a very powerful card.
Yeah, it's really good. I think because it's the only affiliated card and because the leadership of Defenders is medium, like it's not bad, but it's certainly not super amazing. I think in a lot of ways, it is the most compelling reason to be playing Defenders. unless you're just in love with all of their affiliated characters and you can't imagine a team where you don't play all of them, there's often other affiliations where you could be playing Valkyrie or Doctor Strange or whatever it might be. But Defenders, in a lot of ways, especially in the competitive meta, has been defined by this card and the plays that it creates.
Yeah, I think especially with as fast as the game is right now, I think Pentagrams is the main reason I'm testing Defenders right now myself. And by far their strongest cards, they have a couple pretty niche cards after that. And I guess technically what they're Doctor Strange and Wong cards, but worth mentioning here is we always kind of mention the specific named ones. So next up we have Seven Sons of Cinnabus. And what do we think of the Cinnabons?
I like this card. I'm not American, so it bugs me every time anyone says Cinnabons because I don't know what you're talking about.
Wait a minute. You don't have Cinnabons over there?
No. It's a brand.
Well, so you know what it is.
Cinnamon roll. I just assume that it's something to do with cinnamon something. It's called Cinnabons. I assume it's cinnamon flavored buns. Is it not?
Well, you've successfully put it together. I don't understand why this is a regional analogy then.
Okay. Sure. So, I guess. Cool. Cinnamon flavor buns. So, I think this card is okay. It's, the effect is powerful.
You'd call it a biscuit. So it'd be a cinnamon flavored biscuit, wouldn't it?
Well, we have buns. You have.
Oh, you do?
Buns. Yeah, we have buns. Yeah. Of course we've got buns. We've got hot cross buns. We have cinnamon buns. We just don't have cinna buns.
See, the Great British Baking Show is confusing me. I have no idea what a biscuit is, but we'll talk about that at some other time. All right. Seven Sons of Cinnabus. Sorry. What do you think of it, Pat?
I think it's a fine card. I think it's a little bit niche. The biggest problem with it is it's hard to set up because you have to have two allies in range, and it needs to have multiple enemies in its beam in order to be really worth it. If you can achieve that, it's pretty good. But it is quite difficult to achieve that. And you usually can't achieve that without moving with Doctor Strange. And if you need to move to use this card to hit two people, when you could have stood still and just used the normal attacks twice, the total value you're getting is not that high. It's the kind of card that I would take in my eight if I plan to play a lot of E-map secures, right? A lot of Demons Downtown or Gamma Wave, where I can more reliably use it to good effect. And if I don't plan to do that, then I will not take it.
Yeah, it's just got too many restrictions for me personally. Not restrictions. It is too many limitations on when I can get it off. I get what you're saying about Demons Downtown. I just don't honestly play that much Demons with Defenders. I hate Incinerated Doctor Strange, for example.
Feels bad.
Yeah, so I don't think it's a bad card. It just, for me, isn't one that I have any desire to really play. Also, Strange has really good attacks, right? Like, don't get me wrong, a BD5 really 8-dice attack is really good, but his base attack is very powerful with the push in any direction, and it's a nice builder. And then he has Cytorak, which is an incredible spender in and of itself.
Last thing I'll say about this card, I mean, we did talk about it in our review of the box set many moons ago, but it's good with the leadership, right? A beam with his leadership is nice. It's pretty cute. You can hex a lot of things, incinerate a lot of things. But yeah, I think it's a card that's nice to have, but by no means a must-have.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of has like an anti-synergy with Demons too, right? Because doesn't Cinnabons incinerate?
It does. So you're right. Like, you can't stack incinerate. But I mean, it's not necessarily an anti-synergy in the sense that you're still benefiting from the incinerate if it's applied first.
Yeah, that's true. Fair enough. Okay, anyway, moving on. Next, we have Vapors of Valtor.
So this is a card that has the same restrictive requirements as Seven Sons in that you have to have multiple people near Strange to use it. And for my money, has a less explosive payoff. It's more like it's an always useful ability that you can use offensively or defensively, right? You can target a friend or an enemy with this card and then start rerolling their defense dice or their attack dice. I think it's fine, but it's just very restrictive, and the total effect is not impactful enough that I really want to jump through the hoops that I have to jump to use it.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of hit the nail on the head there for me. It's just not worth the slot, right? Tactics card slots for me are more and more competitive, and the benefit of it is just a little too... The restrictions around not using quite. It, right? I have to be close to Doctor Strange and everything like that. It's just not quite worth it.
Yeah. The restriction is really high. And you may not think that it's that high, right? I want to caution people against this. You look at it and you say, oh, the restriction is I need to have two friends nearby. That's going to be easy. I can just deploy like that and keep them there, or I can move people. But games just don't play out that way, right? You need to move your characters spread apart to sit on secures. Your opponent is throwing your models around. You have order of activation, and you end up in this situation where you're like, well, I want to move Strange second, but if he doesn't go first, then the other characters are going to be out of range. You know, there's just so many things that happen in the game that make this dual character requirement of positioning just too difficult.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing I'll point out is, like, at its cheapest, Doctor Strange and two friends is going to be, what, 10 points, which is still a lot of points to have in one area. And Doctor Strange has other ways to spend 3 power to benefit someone being attacked. He can give them the 2 extra defense dice. So do you want the 1 in 3 shot of rerolling your attacker's dice, which is very powerful, or do you just want to have 2 extra defense dice? And so it's just, Doctor Strange isn't hurting for ways to spend power. I think we both agree on that. So a tactics card revolving around him spending power just isn't my favorite.
Yeah, same. So there are a bunch of other tactics cards that belong to different Defenders characters, but there's so many of them and they're so diverse. I think we're just going to stick to Doctor Strange because he's the leader. And I just want to name drop the others without discussing them. But you already mentioned Gamma Launch on Hulk. Wolverine has Rapid X Program Exceptional Healing. And Ghost Rider has Deal with the Devil. And his other card, whose name I forget, where he drags people along in a really cool way.
I think it's Highway to Hell or something like that. Am I making that up?
Yeah, that's the one. That sounds perfect. Even if it's not the name, it should be. Wong can also use a couple of the cards you mentioned. He can use pentagrams, for example. And I suppose you could also shout out Hawkeye for being able to use professionals if you also bring a Black Widow. There's a bunch of card options. As we mentioned previously, I think Wolverines are the most compelling of those. But the others, you know, you might want to include them in, especially if you like playing the character they're associated with.
Yeah, so what do we think of Defenders in general? What do we think is their... What is the culmination of their pieces? Do they add up to a top-tier affiliation?
So you asked, so I'll answer first. I think the main thing that defines Avengers is Defenders, as I've said many times now, is their flexibility. In terms of their leadership, their leader, and their affiliated characters, they're very flexible. Their tactics cards are not flexible, but Pentagrams is incredibly powerful. And I think Pentagrams is what defines them competitively, and their flexibility is their second strength after that.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And especially in the current meta, we talked about it. I really, really value the ability to get out early with Pentagrams. And personally, I've really enjoyed playing Defender. So I don't know if Defenders is the top of the pile, so to speak, but they're a very compelling affiliation. I really enjoy playing them. I love the flexibility of not always being shoehorned in into one plan or strategy on any given map or playstyle. So if you want some optionality, if you want some modality, so to speak, I would definitely consider giving Defenders a review, right? I think we agree that they have a very powerful leader.
Yes, very powerful. He's better in play than he looks on paper. If you're skeptical about Doctor Strange, put him on the table. He's awesome.
Yeah, I think we agree that they have a good leadership, right? Not a great leadership, but it's a good leadership value.
Yeah, it's fine. It's okay on most characters. On a couple, it shines. And we'll talk about the unaffiliated ones that it shines with in the after credit scene.
Yeah, I think it's better than average, but not great, right? I think they have a really good suite of affiliated characters, especially with the inclusion of Wolverine. I think they have, again, 9 characters, and there's enough good ones in there that you can make a really compelling affiliated roster, right?
Yeah, very, very good roster, very diverse. Perhaps the downside of the diversity is they don't necessarily have a huge amount of synergy built between the characters. Mm-hmm. But you can build, the roster is deep enough that you can build in lots of different ways.
And I think we combine that with their extremely singular, powerful team tactics card that you have a pretty solid affiliation when everything is said and done there.
Yeah. Above average leader, average leadership, good affiliated characters, and one good tactics card. And as we've said before, one good tactics card is just fine. Very happy with that.
All right. Is there anything else you think we need to cover in the main episode for the Defenders affiliation review? Again, if you want to play a flexible affiliation where you have to kind of respond and you have different pieces and where to use those pieces, I think it's a great one to explore.
Yeah, and then if you want to be proactive, then pentagrams is a great option there as well. I think it's a great choice. I recommend it to anyone. I think it's good fun.
All right, everyone. Well, I want to thank you for listening to the Defenders Affiliation Review for us. I'm considering them for season 4 of the Tabletop Simulator League. Definitely fighting with Magneto, though. I really love Magneto. So stay tuned to see what I end up playing. I'd love to hear what you guys are playing for Defenders. So would Pat. Till next time, everyone, cheers and happy gaming.
Somewhere across the Bifrost, way up high, there's a pod that I've heard of once in a lullaby. Skies are blue, and the dreams that you dare to dream really do come true.
That was actually pretty
short. We worried about time, and then we whizzed through everything.
Yeah.
Was the total time for that?
Just about 40 minutes, which is fine. No, 36 minutes. That's fine. On the shorter end, I think we'll be okay.
Okay.
I don't see a good way to add more value back into it right now, right?
I mean, we said everything we wanted to say. We were just pretty quick on
it. Yeah, and I don't, like, our podcast episodes have grown in length. Like, I don't think there's anything wrong with it. I do want to say, good news, Pat Dunford, Cinnabon set to open 150 sites in the United Kingdom, posted on the 30th November of 2020. So, hey, in the next 5 years.
Oh, my gosh.
You're welcome.
Wow, wow, wow. I can't wait. I'll start playing Doctor Strange in anticipation.
Also, there was a Cinnabon that closed in London. It closed in 2018. So, there you go. You missed your chance.
Sad. Yeah, well, my chance will come again, no doubt.
Yeah, it was somewhere in a name that I don't remember. But, yeah, anyway, there you go. A little bit of Cinnabon information for you.
Brilliant, thank you.
All right, Pat, anything else you want to add? I think that's good.
No, I think that was good. I think that was the best of the 4 bits we recorded.
Probably was.
It's good. I think that was the best of the 4 bits we recorded.
Probably was.